mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, To Your Health, with students heading back to class very soon. August is Children's Eye Health and Safety Month, because quality of vision is a key indicator of school success. Also this morning, Findlay High School head football coach Stephan Adams previews this weekend's season opening scrimmage and talks about preparing the Trojans for another year on the gridiron. And we have more recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, August 9th, 2024. So America is the first country to cross the century mark for medals won at the Paris Olympics. We now have 103 total medals, including 30 gold. That is leading the list of all of the nations on both counts. China is second with 29 gold and 73 overall, and the host nation France is third with 54 total medals. So we have almost doubled the number of the host nation. So that is pretty impressive. Katie Ledecky and Nick Mead will be the U.S. flag bearers for the closing ceremony on Sunday. Katie Ledecky became the most decorated female U.S. Olympian of all time at these games. And Nick Mead helped the men's rowing team win their first gold in 64 years. So those are good selections. He is the first rower ever to be given the honor of being a flag bearer for Team USA. So pretty cool stuff. You remember one of the big stories the past few days at the Olympics was that Egyptian fencer, Nada Hafez, I think is how you pronounce her name, who announced that she had competed in the fencing competition while she was pregnant, 7 months pregnant, in fact. And now an archer from Azerbaijan, Yelgul Ramazanova, also says that she is expecting. It says a general uptick in pregnant elite athletes resulted in the IOC publishing recommendations for training during pregnancy back in 2016. Guidelines suggest that women can safely continue regular aerobic activity while monitoring for symptoms. However, more research is needed. Unfortunately, the story here on the Newswire goes on to say, unfortunately, many women struggle with societal pressure to choose between being a mother and being an athlete. That is certainly a dilemma that male athletes do not face. But apparently they are not letting it stop them in these games. I think this is the first time that we have had athletes come out and say, yes, I am with child. I am expecting, still participating in the Olympics. It's wow. That's a wild story. Snoop Dogg has been one of the most popular characters, the television coverage of the Olympics on NBC. And apparently he may be back. NBC executives were asked by the folks at The Athletic if there are plans for Snoop to return for the next Olympic Games. And they said, hey, we would love to have him back in any capacity. Thrilled to have him back is the word that they use. They would be thrilled. The next Olympic Games would be the Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina, Italy, in February of 2026. So maybe Snoop would be back. The Winter Olympics here in a couple of years. And by the way, speaking of the Olympics, you probably know someone who thinks that they have what it takes. Maybe you yourself have been sitting on the couch watching the game saying, oh, I could do that. 40% of Americans in a recent survey believe that they have what it takes to compete in at least one summer or winter Olympic sport. 40% think that, yes, they could compete. Maybe not win, but could be competitive in an Olympic sport. So, Wall Street Journal wanted to, well, let's just be honest here. They set out to dispel that myth. They compared the times of various athletes who placed last in their respective events at national competitions. Now, these are the ones that place last, and chances are they are still more athletically inclined than you are sitting on your couch. And they compared those to the times being clocked by their Olympic counterparts. For example, Team USA sprinter Sha'Carri Richardson could run an additional 50 meters before the average sprinter crosses the 100-meter mark. So she would be half again as far ahead as the average person by the time you were to reach 100 meters. She'd be at 150. Katie Ledecky swam the 400-meter freestyle in 4 minutes, 0.86, 400.86. An amateur competitive swimmer would take a minute and a half more to finish. A minute and a half, which means that Katie Ledecky would be out of the pool and drying off and checking her social media, while you, the average swimmer, still had three lengths of the pool to go. And for marathoners, the average finishing time for men, 4 hours, 26 minutes, and 40 seconds, which works out to an average pace of 10 minutes and 10 seconds per mile. And during February's Olympic trials, marathon runner Connor Mance clocked 26.2 miles in 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 5 seconds, an average of 4:55, 4-minute, 55-second mile. So, more than twice the pace. Long story short, just stay on the couch and watch. You're not competing in the Olympics. You do not have what it takes. A couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. So, big news this week. There were, three of Taylor Swift's concerts in Austria that were canceled because of terror threats. And thank goodness they uncovered this plot before anything happened, because that would have just been awful. But I thought this was kind of interesting. Taylor Swift has been in the news for the better part of a year now with her record-breaking Eras tour, and a lot of folks talking about how expensive it is. However, it is not one of the most costly concerts out there in terms of cost per minute. And the value proposition of a Taylor Swift concert is much better than some other artists that are out there touring right now. Recent analysis of 200 popular music artists between 2019 and 2023 who went out on tours found that in terms of cost per minute, a Taylor Swift concert isn't even like in the top three. The number one most expensive concert, Bruno Mars. For the amount you pay for a ticket and the amount of time he performs, it works out to $2.19 per minute that you will pay to see Bruno Mars in concert. $2.19 per minute. If you go to see U2, that'll set you back $2.12 a minute. And the pop rap star Drake clocks in at $1.81 per minute. Taylor Swift, on the other hand, because her concerts are over 3 hours long, yes, they're expensive, but they are 3 hours plus, and thus fans are only spending $1.19 a minute to see her perform. So when you put it that way, it's actually not as expensive as what you might think. On the other end of the spectrum, the best value among touring artists, the rock group Korn at $0.39 per minute. Just $0.39 is all it would cost. The downside there, of course, is that you would have to go see a Korn concert. So that's the only negative. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, you're heading into the weekend. Are you going to be lazy? You're going to do anything this weekend? You're just going to lounge around on the couch? It's my birthday weekend, so I plan on being as lazy as possible. But if you are just planning on doing nothing this weekend, good for you. Americans need, according to this research, Americans need about 60 lazy days a year. And this survey of 2,000 adults finds that 11% of us actually put our lazy days on the calendar. We actually schedule a lazy day. If you schedule a lazy day, is it really all that lazy? I mean, if you go through the effort of scheduling a lazy day, I don't know. It's a conundrum. Saturdays and Sundays, obviously the most popular do-nothing days, and the least popular choice for a lazy day, Tuesday. I don't know why. In a typical lazy day, the average person spends 2 hours in bed. I would assume they're talking about 2 extra hours aside from the time that you sleep. 2 extra hours in bed, 1 hour eating, 3 hours watching TV, 1 hour reading, and 2 hours scrolling. The researchers on this survey say everyone deserves a day of rest here and there, and maybe even a bit more often, and days like these are so important when it comes to mental wellness. So 60 lazy days a year, long and short of it is, the reason we bring it up, if you are planning on doing nothing this weekend, don't feel bad about it. Don't let anyone make you feel guilty about taking a little me time, because we need those days. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny skies expected today with a high around 80. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the upper 50s. The Seneca County Drug Task Force, along with additional officers from the Fostoria Police Department, Tiffin Police Department, and the Sandusky County Drug Task Force, executed a drug-related search warrant on a residence on Columbus Avenue in Fostoria. Authorities say a search of the residence led to the confiscation of suspected methamphetamine, crack cocaine, criminal tools, drug paraphernalia, a firearm, and U.S. currency. Authorities say a 42-year-old was arrested for an active arrest warrant, and additional charges of trafficking methamphetamine and other charges are pending. Get more on our website. Recreational marijuana is now legally available in Ohio, and there's a host of rules for dispensaries, consumers, and law enforcement.
For dispensaries, that means following the state's mandate for sales, meaning checking customers' IDs at the door to make sure they're 21 or older, and following the state's limits. For you as a consumer, according to Ohio's cannabis information website, an adult 21 or older is allowed to legally own up to 2.5 ounces or 70 grams of weed, and an individual can grow up to 6 plants with a max of 12 per household. But there are still a lot of restrictions, like driving while under the influence. You can't smoke marijuana in public, sell it without a license, or drive it across state lines.
WTOL 11's Tim Miller reporting. Blanchard Valley Health System has donated 4 automated external defibrillators, AEDs, to Camp Barry to improve safety at the Boy Scout camp south of Finley. BVHS says this is an extraordinary opportunity to give back to the community and ensure the safety of our youth. Camp Barry says hundreds of people could be at the site at any given time. Day camps and overnight camps for scouts are offered during the summer, and during the off-season, children and adults continue to come to camp for various scouting-related activities. Camp Barry previously had an AED at the building known as the Health Lodge. However, it was older technology that needed to be replaced. Get more details about the AED donation and the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So with just a few days to go now until kids start heading back to class in the area, a reminder that August is Children's Eye Health and Safety Month, and the fact that proper vision is a key factor in student success. Optometrist Dr. Jen Wademan is with us this morning, and in fact, that is one of the first things that they will often check if there is a kid that's struggling in class. How is his or her eyesight?
Correct. It's great to be here. here to talk about this topic. It's near and dear to my heart, obviously.
Yeah. I wonder if it's maybe a little bit more difficult now, though, than it used to be. I mean, I remember when I was in school many, many years ago, a lot of the lessons were up there on the blackboard, and so you had this kind of de facto real-world eye chart there. Can you see the front of the room? And obviously today, so much more teaching is done on screens. Does it become harder to recognize when a child is struggling with vision issues?
You know, definitely times have changed where we're just seeing such an increase of screen time, digital devices, and that's in the classroom, whether on a computer or laptop. And then, you know, we talk about at home as a parent, I totally get that.
Sure.
You know, kids can be on a phone or a tablet. So, you know, we're definitely seeing different things on a larger scale, you know, whether that's the increase in nearsightedness we're seeing in younger kids, or on a smaller scale, you know, issues like dry eyes, which we really don't think too much about kids having dry eyes in years past. But, you know, being on a screen, we tend to not blink our eyes as frequently. And so the surface of the front of the eye can get more dry. And that can lead to symptoms like, you know, burning, redness, irritation, discomfort. So, and then not to mention, you know, eye strain, eye fatigue, headaches, all those things that can come with screen time. So yes, very different from, you know, just having the whiteboard or the chalkboard to look at. Now we're kind of entering this realm of, okay, screens and devices, and how does that impact us in the long run?
So just to reiterate and emphasize this, all of those screens on those digital devices are in fact impacting eye health in small or even more significant ways.
Yeah, just how our eyes are working overall. You know, overall, when we talk about blue light, I mean, it's a topic that there's a lot of information out there. However, in terms of a concrete, large body of evidence of, you know, how does this, we don't really know the long-term impacts of that for certain. And so it's something that definitely requires more research and, you know, just figuring out, okay, how do we deal with these day-to-day things in this world of digital screens.
Yeah. So with all of that in mind, what should parents be concerned about, watching for? What can they do to protect their child's eyesight?
Yeah. You know, a good thing to kind of realize is that a lot of vision issues can be noticed in the classroom. You know, kids are using their eyes in a variety of ways. And when we look at, you know, especially kids who need corrective lenses, children really have different eye care needs than adults, and whether it's their anatomy and how their anatomy is, their facial anatomy, their eye anatomy, how that's continuing to grow and change. Like, you know, we mentioned how they're using devices. They are using, their arms are shorter. They do have a screen closer to their face. Also, you know, kids tend to be outside more. And so we're looking at UV protection and making sure that they have the right, again, for kids who need correction, have the right kind of products specifically tailored to them, because how they're using their eyes can be different than us as adults.
You bring up a point, and I wanted to ask about this. If there is a problem, if we do discover that our child has a vision issue that requires some form of correction, how young is too young to consider things like corrective surgery or even contact lenses? I mean, should you just kind of default to traditional glasses until a certain age?
The short answer to that is yes. So, you know, we can see kids as young as 6 months of age. And of course, you know, we wouldn't want to do contacts at that age. Although, you know, I'll add this, for some kids, if they have congenital cataracts or they have some underlying health issue, they sometimes contact lenses are necessary because there is a window of time where a child's eyes are developing and we're kind of building, I like to call, an image library in their brain. And so we want to make sure what the world that they're seeing is clear. So there are some rare examples of kids needing contacts when they're babies, but that's rare. I'd say, you know, getting your kids in a pair of glasses first, regardless of the age, is primary. But as kids get older and they get more mature, or they can take on more responsibilities, that's when we start talking about contacts. As they get even older and into adulthood, that's when we usually look at corrective surgery or refractive surgery like LASIK. So that's much, much later in life. So glasses are, the best first step in terms of correcting vision, providing that clear visual library for our kids so they can, see clearly and comfortably for years to come.
So, and again, that emphasizes the importance of getting your kids to the eye doctor regularly, kids and ourselves. I mean, we don't want to shortchange ourselves, but especially getting our kids to the eye doctor on a regular basis, make sure we have these things checked out.
100%, yes.
So, and beyond that, kind of circling back to what we were talking about before, with respect to kind of everyday best practices, because, as you were saying, the kids are on their screens constantly for school and just, for recreation. It's just the world we live in today. And with respect to all of the different factors that play into this, what are some of those everyday best practices to protect our eyes?
Yeah, definitely. So, beyond being mindful about digital screens, encouraging unplugged activities, having your kid go outside and play. Also to, not forget about sun protection for our kids' eyes. So whether that's a pair of sunglasses or eyeglasses with proper UV protection, that also would be paramount. Kids are spending more time outside. They spend more time outside than adults. That's better said. And so they're getting a lot more UV light, into the internal structures of the eye. So we want to protect that at a young age. And most importantly, we want to create healthy habits for our kids. And
right.
So, that ties into that, yearly comprehensive exam. So as we're setting our kids up for their physical exam or their dental exam, we want to make sure we also get that vision component as well.
Again, an important reminder, with August being Children's Eye Health and Safety Month, and again, kids are getting set to head back to class, a very important indicator of classroom success for students is how well they see. It only makes sense. And again, optometrist Dr. Jen Wademan is with us this morning. Where do we get more information?
Great question. So Zeiss.com, Zeiss.com is a phenomenal website that has a lot of resources for overall eye health, vision care, but also products. And they have a whole host of lenses and corrective lenses that are really specific to kids that I'm super excited about to be able to offer my patients. And if you don't have an eye doctor, they have a section where you can find a local eye doctor in your area.
Even better. Dr. Wademan, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Opening night of the high school football season is right around the corner. First actual game is Friday the 23rd. Trojans will be on the road against Toledo Central Catholic. But as the preparations are now underway for the season, the first scrimmage will happen tomorrow at Donnell Stadium as the Trojans welcome Toledo St. Francis. 9:40, bright and early, the airtime right here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com at 95.5 FM with Tim Montgomery and Don Masters on the call. And earlier this week, in between practices, we caught up with Findlay High School head football coach Stephan Adams for a preview of the season opening scrimmage and to talk a little bit about prepping the Trojans for another year of gridiron action. Coach, thanks very much for taking the time. Obviously, a very busy time of the year for you getting ready for a new season, but very exciting at the same time, I got to think.
Yeah, always exciting. It's always exciting when I always say, it's that time of the year when you have like the sound of the band, kids are back on campus for other sports. So No, we're super excited to get into this fall season.
So obviously following up on a very successful year last year, a very successful campaign, what are your goals heading into this season as a follow-up?
Yeah, I think we just want to be in a position to where we consistently are in that conversation for one of the top teams in our league, of course, and also a team that, you know, makes a pretty good run in the playoffs. I think those are obvious things I think that anybody wants for their program. You know, but at the end of the day, when we look at it and you scale back, I think the biggest thing is just looking at where we are as a team, program, individuals, where we started, you know, in our offseason, and hopefully look back at the end of the year and see how much we've grown and see if a lot of our core values and core expectations are being on full display each and every single game. We always talk about being able to put a good product out there on Friday nights, and you know that's exactly what we want. And then hopefully, as a byproduct of what we put out there, you know, we're winning ball games and taking care of business.
Based on what you have seen so far, what are you most excited about with this team this season? I mean, it's the nature of the beast in high school football that every year is a little bit different team. One group of guys graduates. You've got new young guys moving in to fill some of those holes. What are you most excited for coming into this campaign?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's such a new team. You know, there are some cornerstones of, you know, each group. So, you know, you can look at a kid like Ashton Yeager, who's played 4 years of varsity football on a D line. You can look at I think Zach Searles, really our whole offensive line, who last year was considered maybe a position of uncertainty. You know, all those guys have returned, and how the strength that they are there. I look at obviously our quarterback, right, Ryan Montgomery, coming back and four right. years of varsity football. So there's a lot of cornerstones that we have in certain positions and certain spots, but then there's some positions that we lost that we're trying to fill voids of right now. And I think the beauty of that is, you know, seeing the guys that are stepping up, right? Every year, guys step up. Kids, some kids surprise you. Some kids grow from some hard work in the off season. So I think for us, it's more so just really fun watching us put this thing together, meet as a staff, talk about all this stuff, and then, you know, come out every single day and get to see the growth of where our team is now. So definitely some guys are going to step up this year, but I'm encouraged and excited to see them, here before our scrimmage.
Well, it's kind of what you mentioned just a moment ago. That's got to be really rewarding to see something that maybe a year ago or through the course of the season last year was a question mark or a weak spot turn into a point of strength.
Correct. No, it's really unique. It's like last year we knew what we had at our skill position. We were pretty confident about what we had and the guys that were behind them. I believe, you know, we had a strong senior class last year as well, right? And those guys really enjoyed each other, were great kids, loved being around each other. You know, we knew what we had in them and we're excited to see them go out there and put it all together. And then so we come back this year and it's like, all right, those guys are gone, but we know we have our offensive line back and they're very strong. We know we have our defensive line only lost one person, so they're strong and they're back. And, you know, games are won in the trenches, and if you can have some certainty at those spots, I think everything else typically can take care of itself.
Flip side of that question, though, obviously, again, nature of the beast with the natural turnover of personnel. What are the biggest concerns, the biggest challenges that you will have to overcome this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, on the lines of that, right, is being able to replace, you know, seniors who played. I mean, you look at our back end last year and our defensive backfield, we started three seniors. You know, returning for us is Israel Moore. And he's had a great, great camp thus far, has shown great leadership and great knowledge of the game. And it's really grown, in a lot of ways as well, too. You know, you look at offense and, we return Reese Little and Jacob Raglin, but we lost a lot of production in, you know, Javonte Hill, Ben Best, Austin Hasselback, and then also Matt Guthrie. So, you know, we have guys right now stepping up and really trying to earn their roles and earn their spots. But we know that, you know, you don't just go out and replace that type of production. But what you hope you can do is you hope you can develop players to step in, and do, the best that they can do. Right. And then you know, if they take care of their business and learn good practice habits and work their tails off, you know, maybe we can make up more than I even know right now.
With that in mind, with this first scrimmage coming up on Saturday, what do you want to see? What will you be looking for out of this scrimmage and the first opportunity to sort of get out there against somebody other than your own teammates?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, right? I mean, we talk about practicing smart, practicing hard. You know, it's kind of like the cage mentality where you want to be as physical as you possibly can within the confines of what we're allowed to do. You want to be able to do all those things. But at the end of the day, we want to take care and protect the teammates as well, too. So, you know, it'll be fun to see really who stands out, right? Like, and see if all this work that we've done thus far, you know, how far along are we, you know, or how close are we, or, you know, how far away are we? You know, so it just gets a lot of questions answered. You know, it's kind of the first time you're putting guys, you know, against somebody else that maybe won't be as friendly.
Yeah.
And, you know, how will they respond in those moments? I mean, it really is essentially like it's like a pretest. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
What, you know, we walk out of there. You want to be able to watch the film and say, hey, you know, what did we learn from this film? You know, one, I think the most important thing is, you know, that our kids play hard. You know, I think that's what we always expect out of them. So with that box check, and then you start getting into the small nuances of small details and, you know, schematically, how do we execute? Mm-hmm. Do we execute at a high level? You know, and yeah, just a lot of answers from it. It's like a blank canvas right now. We don't know, but we're excited to see, you know, are the guys that we expect to do what they're supposed to do, do they dominate and take care of business? And then some of our newer guys, you know, how did they react to this whole thing as well, too? So, yeah, I think just getting some answers, you know, getting some base answers and see where we are.
It's also got to be exciting for the players, and I imagine the coaches alike, to actually go out there and take the field in front of fans for the first time in the season.
Absolutely. It adds a little bit of something, right? I think it's a great opportunity for parents to get a first look at their kids. You know, obviously, we're not just housing people at practice every 2 seconds, but, you know, I think for parents to be able to get a first look, right, about at their kids, and then, you know, for them to see, man, you know, I want to see the hard work that they've put in, you know, and how they perform and, you know, do they play their best. So, and I also just think it's just a great for our community. You know, it really means that fall time is coming, right? School is starting back up. You know, our fall sports are coming around together. You know, Friday nights will be here, you know, faster and then sooner than later. So, yeah, we're excited to kind of go out there and show what we've worked really hard to do and for parents to be able to watch and enjoy and friends and family of the community just to be able to watch and enjoy too and see who the 2024 Friendly Football Trojans are going to be.
Trojan head football coach Stephan Adams with us this morning on the cusp of another high school football season. Coach, thanks very much for taking the time. Certainly best of luck this coming year.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it. And go Trojans.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Florida woman reportedly blamed Hurricane Debbie for failing her sobriety test. You know, had the hurricane that struck in Florida a few days ago, and Candace Wisecup was apparently out driving in the storm when she wasn't supposed to be, so she was stopped by the local sheriff for, you know, being out in the storm when people weren't supposed to be out in the storm. Now, the deputy also noticed that she was driving rather erratically. And so on a hunch, or maybe a little bit more than a hunch, he conducted a field sobriety test. Ms. Wisecup reportedly tried to explain that it was the winds from Hurricane Debbie that made her unable to walk a straight line. She blamed the hurricane for failing her sobriety test. Now, that might have worked had it not been for the 4 open containers that were found on the seat next to her in the car. 4 open containers. Yeah, that's probably the giveaway there. More Florida fun here. The broken news. Deputies pulled over a driver for speeding along the interstate and discovered that he had more than just a lead foot. They reported smelling marijuana in the car, the distinct odor of marijuana. And let's see here. They also found oxycodone pills and an unlicensed firearm. The reason why they conducted the search is that Anthony James Jr., the driver, literally passed out three times during the traffic stop. He passed out three times during the traffic stop. He tried to explain to the officers that he felt ill. So, let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news, a little closer to home, a Detroit man has been accused of trying. Now, here's the thing. And this, again, another criminal undone by social media. Detroit man has been accused of trying to sell a stolen go-kart back to its original owner. Apparently, the go-kart was taken from outside a Family Dollar store in mid-July, and the owner spotted his go-kart for sale on Facebook Marketplace. So he arranged a meetup with Donald Wayne Cummings, the poster of the item. And police say that, indeed, Mr. Cummings showed up to complete the sale, and they placed him under arrest. Also, just as an added measure, just for extra fun, Mr. Cummings showed up to sell the go-kart in a stolen van. So they got him not just for selling the stolen go-kart, but also for Grand Theft Auto. Got a twofer. Got a twofer there. That's pretty cool. This is actually pretty cool. Also from the state of Michigan, where a man is facing charges after his bad luck. Apparently, this happened at the Ziegler-Kalamazoo Marathon back in May, when a man allegedly pulled a handgun during an argument with another person. His bad luck that an off-duty detective was running in the marathon and saw the whole thing go down. Off-duty detective running in the marathon saw it happen. He and another Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety officer attempted to take the man into custody, but he eluded them by running into the race crowd. A canine officer eventually tracked 23-year-old Giante Moore, where he was hiding beneath a boat in a residential backyard along the race course. He was arrested for being a felon in possession of a firearm and now faces 15 years behind bars. His bad luck that the detective was actually running in the marathon at the time. That's when you know it's not your day. That's... You know the old saying, one man's trash is another man's treasure? Well, that's kind of the case for some lucky people. After the owners of the Red Martini Lounge in Atlanta were evicted from their location, and people made off with boxes of alcohol that were left out in the parking lot. Happened last week. The club's owners lost the lease on their bar. On their lounge. They lost the lease actually a year ago after the landlord claimed that the bar owned more than $55,000 in back rent, according to a court order. The attorney for the lounge denies the claim, and they say the eviction was 100% illegal. But they actually put all of the lounge's belongings out in the parking lot. And that resulted in what the local law enforcement officers call a chaotic and dangerous situation. With everybody trying to make off with the cases of alcohol that were left in the parking lot. Apparently several people had to be arrested. And the establishment is facing substantial insurance losses. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is just weird. A research team from the Scent Culture and Tourism Association. First of all, I didn't even know that there was such a thing as the Scent Culture and Tourism Association, but apparently there is. And a research team from this organization has recreated the perfume that Julius Caesar would have worn over 2,000 years ago. They have reportedly recreated his perfume, his cologne that Julius Caesar would have worn 2,000 plus years ago. Historical accounts suggest that the fragrance was made of mint, rose, lemon, lavender, jasmine, water lily, violet, cedarwood, amber, and the sweat of gladiators. Now, I know where you get all of those things except the sweat of gladiators. I'm not sure where you would get that to recreate the distinct aroma. Julius Caesar appointed himself dictator of the Roman Republic when he was 54 years old, was assassinated in 44 BC. I just want to know, they recreated his cologne. I have no idea why. That's the question that I wonder. Why? Why? Did the world need this? I mean, it's not bringing the dinosaurs back from the dead like a la Jurassic Park exactly, but it's still, you got to wonder, why? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN has the opening tune-up for the Findlay Trojans on Saturday as they scrimmage Toledo St. Francis. This is Tim Montgomery, and WFIN will bring you the action live from Donnell Stadium at 10 a.m. Then get set for another exciting season of Trojan football with the opener on Friday, August 23rd at Toledo Central Catholic. The Trojans play here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Do you have a tattoo? According to Pew Research, one third of Americans, 32%, do have a tattoo. One in five, a little more than one in five, 22%, actually have more than one. And you would think that with so many tattoos out there, so many tattooed individuals, that there would be some measure of buyer's remorse. And you would be right about that. According to a new survey, nearly one third of those who have a tattoo regret getting it. One third. Nearly a third, 60% of those who got inked on a dare wish they hadn't have done that. Not a big surprise. So why do they dislike their tattoos? Well, 70%, nearly 70%, who say they dislike their tats are upset with the design. Maybe it was a picture that didn't turn out to look exactly like they thought it would, or it's bad artwork. Misspellings, that's another big regret or ragret sometimes, right? Misspelled tattoos. 70% who dislike the tats have a problem with the design. 43% don't like where they decided to place their body decoration. It's not so much that they regret the tattoo itself, it's where they had it placed. And this poll of 1,500 Americans was conducted by Inkbox, which is a company that makes cosmetic-grade, semi-permanent tattoos that will eventually fade before those regrets kick in. So I thought this was kind of interesting. They found that half of those who opt for a semi-permanent tattoo do so because of this indecisiveness. They're not sure what to have as a tattoo or where to put it on their body or whatever. So that indecisiveness is the reason why people go with semi-permanent tattoos. 25% have a fear of needles, and this doesn't use needles, so that eliminates that problem. And 35% say they opt for a semi-permanent tattoo in order to test drive what the real thing would look like, which I think is probably a good idea because, you know, once it's permanent, it's permanent. If you don't like it, as many people apparently don't, if you don't like where you put it, which it appears many people don't, not much you can do about it. But with a semi-permanent tattoo, you can. Well, that music can mean only one thing. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio for another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen to finish up the week. Good morning, dear.
Good morning.
So, the collection of recipes this week, very easy. They're always easy. I mean, yeah,
that's what I try.
Yeah, try and make them as easy as possible. So anybody can do these. But especially this week. These are really easy recipes.
Yeah.
And I love this first one because, I mean, you know, chicken chunks, chicken nuggets, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's a kind of a standard thing. Yeah. But you're actually grilling these.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a little unique in that respect. These are grilled chicken chunks.
Yes. So a quarter cup of sweet chili sauce, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 1 tablespoon of ketchup, 2 teaspoons of vegetable oil, 1 teaspoon of ground pepper, 4 boneless chicken breasts cut into chunks, vegetable oil, and salt and pepper to taste. So make the glaze in a small bowl, whisking together the chili sauce, the soy sauce, the ketchup, oil, and ginger. Then cut up your chicken breasts into large chunks, lightly brush or spray with the oil, and season with salt and pepper to taste. Grill the chicken over medium heat until cooked through about 10 minutes, turning once or twice. Then brush the chicken chunks with the glaze that you made and continue to grill until the meat is no longer pink.
Right.
5 to 8 more minutes, turning and brushing with the glaze every 2 or 3 times during that 5 to 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really going to be out there keeping an eye on it when you put that glaze on it.
Not something that you're going to put on the grill and walk away from, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
And that makes sense because they're smaller. They're going to cook faster.
They're going to cook pretty fast. Yeah. So it's not going to take long. And then remove from the grill and enjoy.
Yeah. Enjoy indeed the grilled chicken chunks. I love that. That is a great idea.
Yes.
To go along with that, we have a traditional baked bean casserole.
Yes. So this one is 1.5 pounds of ground beef, 1 small onion chopped, 1 bell pepper cleaned and chopped, 1 28-ounce can of pork and beans, 1/2 cup of barbecue sauce, 1/2 cup of ketchup, 2 tablespoons of spicy brown mustard. If you don't have spicy brown, you can do regular mustard too. That is fine. 1 tablespoon of molasses, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce. I always say that wrong.
Worcestershire sauce.
1 tablespoon of soy sauce, 4 tablespoons of brown sugar, and 6 to 8 slices of bacon cooked and crumbled.
So can I just say that Worcestershire sauce is one of my favorite things in the kitchen?
Oh, really?
Okay. I just like the name. Worcestershire sauce. Anyway.
So every time we have a recipe with that
Worcestershire
word,
sauce,
I will just have you say it.
We'll do that.
Since you like it so much and I have so many problems with that.
Worcestershire sauce.
So preheat your oven to 350 degrees and spray a 9x13 baking dish with nonstick cooking spray. Brown your ground beef with your onion and your bell peppers in a large pan. Then add your pork and beans, your barbecue sauce, your ketchup, your mustard, and your molasses, and your
Worcestershire sauce.
Soy sauce and brown sugar. Stir well and cook for about 5 minutes. Then pour into your prepared casserole dish. Top with bacon and cover the dish with tin foil. Bake for about 45 minutes. Remove foil and then bake for another 10 minutes or so. Let stand for about 10 minutes before serving and
there
enjoy.
There you go. So sort of your traditional baked beans with a bit of a twist, a bit of a kick.
Yes.
Amp them up a little bit.
Yes. Put some ground beef in there and peppers and onions. Yes.
A baked bean casserole. And for dessert, we top it off with chocolate chip cookie s'mores bars.
Yes.
Now, this is like combining two of the best things ever. Yeah. Chocolate chip cookies and s'mores.
And marshmallows.
What
and
else?
Chocolate. Yeah. And
what else could you ask yes. for here?
So this is 2 16-ounce packages of your refrigerated prepared chocolate chip cookie dough. You can get the tube, or you can get the ones that are flat, that they're already shaped like cookie dough.
Right.
2 4.4 ounces of chocolate bars, like your Hershey bars, 1 7-ounce jar of marshmallow fluff, and 1/2 cup of graham crackers. Crumbs. If you already have the crumbs, great. If not, you can always just have some graham crackers and roll them with a rolling pin and chop them
up.
Make
your own crumbs.
Yeah, make your own crumbs. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Line a 9 by 9 inch baking pan with heavy duty nonstick aluminum foil for easy cleanup. Spray cooking spray and press one slab of the cookie dough into the bottom of the pan, creating a smooth flat layer. Then add a single layer of chocolate chips on top of that, and then on top of that, spread your marshmallow fluff. I use a spatula, and when you spray marshmallow fluff, or spray a little bit of cooking spray on your spatula, and your marshmallow fluff will spread out easily and not stick to your spatula.
A bit of a kitchen hack there.
So evenly sprinkle then with some graham cracker crumbs, slightly flatten the second package of your cookie dough onto some parchment paper and transfer to the baking dish. Press to the edges. Bake for approximately 16 to 18 minutes or until the top is lightly golden brown. Allow bars to cool for at least 3 hours, or if not, overnight in the pan before slicing and serving. If you slice them too early, you could end up just with very messy bars.
Okay.
So this is not one that you, no, this is not one that you want to take out of the oven, let it cool for a few minutes,
and then
slice it.
So definitely let that cool.
You can do it the day before.
Okay. Very good. The recipes for the grilled chicken chunks, the baked bean casserole, and the chocolate chip cookie s'mores bars are posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, are they not?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN on Facebook. So like the Kyra's Kitchen page for all of those recipes. We also have it linked up at goodmornings.net. And of course, on the Facebook page, you can share your favorite recipes, maybe share some ways of spicing up some of the ones that we posted, or make a request for something that you might want to see in the future on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. And once again, my wife Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And with that, we finish up our podcast for today and put another week in the books. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Our little corner of the World Wide Web is right there, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, a proposed revamp of the Fort Findlay Playground at Emory Adams Park that reimagines the space for a new generation is generating strong reaction, and that is exactly what the city wants. We'll explain. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.